Thank you for watching Conscious Consumer Network. The live stream broadcast is free to view. You can pause and rewind live broadcasts to catch up, or view shows at a later date by accessing our free archives of all shows. Check out our broadcast guide to see what's on. You can show your support by donating to our network support fund. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter, or subscribe to the monthly newsletter for updates. We thank you for supporting free and independent media.
Well, we're back. Episode 58 of Unspun. My, how time flies. Your host, Joe Atwell, and I'm here with my co-host, Jan Ervin. And we'll be talking about something that is on my mind often, which is thinking. I often wonder what it is. And it's very difficult to do in the brave new world. And so we're going to try to talk a little bit about problems that and pitfalls that exist for basically being able to understand phenomena. The first one would probably be reason and logic, and just a lack of training in this. This is the most fundamental problem people have, wouldn't you say, Jan?
I would definitely agree with that. In fact, it's a problem that I deal with daily from the audience and the public, you know. And the most interesting thing I would say, Joe, is that the huge vast majority of the people that attack mine or our research, I would say like upwards of 99%+ have never studied it. And if they studied it, they didn't study it thoroughly. They didn't check the citations. They may have listened to 5 or 10 or 15 minutes and then disagreed and sent us a nasty email or message somewhere. You know, and before I let you guys, should say, you know, also support CCN and donate to the show. Support Gnostic Media at GnosticMedia.com. Please make a donation. Buy from the website as well as Joe's website, CaesarsMessiah.com. We all run on donations for doing this, so we greatly appreciate your support.
We do. And I would agree that most people that bring criticism against the research that we create don't produce good criticism. And I don't mean that just, you know, by someone who's biased and trying to win the argument against my critics. It's just that the criticism isn't deeply researched. They don't really have specific errors in fact and reasoning. There's a well-known Bible scholar who was attacking my work, and I asked him, I said, well, what exactly is it? Can, you know, why don't we have like a conversation? And so I had a conversation with him. I recorded it. It went on for an hour. And in that hour, he never produced a single error in fact and reasoning. He just said that I hadn't proved it. That was, you know, and I said, well, it seems like what you have is kind of a kinesthetic problem. In other words, you get dizzy or some kind of emotional issue occurs when you consider my work. That here we've been talking for an hour, wasting our time, and, you know, you don't even bother to bring up an error in fact and reasoning. And that actually is fairly common, not just in Bible research or Shakespearean literary criticism, arcane areas like that, where you'd expect people to basically have training in criticism, but it's really a problem in just everyday life. There are you know, the oligarchs have perfected weaponized anthropology as a general term. And they have many different aspects of it. And you need to know each one of the areas that they're able to basically control your mind with. But one of the ones that's most powerful is just that since they control the narrative, you know, they can then give the impression that everyone believes that America, for example, has altruism as the basis of its foreign policy, just as an idea, you know, that this would be kind of a mental intimidation. If you know, many now, of course, there are many critics against America's foreign policy, but I know that many people who defend it do so just out of the groupthink, you know, pressure that everyone around them believes that, you know, we fought World War II and we, you know, liberated the concentration camps, we defeated Hitler, therefore we are really good people. And so whatever we do today should be seen in that light. And that's one of the, obviously, it's a problem in logic, and it's a problem of clarity and freedom from intimidation. And, you know, you need that just to be able to take the next step to where you start criticizing the logic. And there, of course, people have other problems. But that first impulse that people have, and I've seen this a lot in criticism that Jan gets and in criticism that I get, the criticism really is not errors in fact and reasoning. It's just this impression that what we're saying is somehow wrong. And that's one of the very first things that people can do to improve their thinking is the next time they want to criticize a position of someone else is try to think about how to actually articulate the error in fact and reasoning that really is in back of your criticism.
That's a really good point. And, you know, today some of the things that I want to go into will cover just that. And I wanted to mention this quote from George Orwell that somebody sent me earlier today. And this is from 1984, Book 1, Chapter 7. And he says, "The party told you to reject the evidence of your eyes and ears. It was their final, most essential command." And, you know, so, you know, what this is saying is essentially don't look at things. Don't pay attention to any evidence. Ignore whatever your eyes and ears bring in. And this is exactly what we see going on with the agenda being sold by the Esalen Institute and SRI and the New Age and the Tavistock Institute, Macy Foundation, all this stuff that we've exposed. But, you know, so what I want to do is jump from there to Aldous Huxley's tutor, or excuse me, George Orwell's tutor. See, now I just gave it away. And so George Orwell was actually a student of Aldous Huxley. And in Aldous Huxley's Doors of Perception, the entire book, The Doors of Perception, is about turning off all of your senses, and this will open the doors of perception, and then you will truly see everything, right? Now, you and I have both done psychedelics, and we know what this is, and we know the limits of it, and the limited hangout, and the direction it goes, because we've both been through it. You know, and most people, you know, quite often attack us, oh, you've never done psychedelics, you've never done ayahuasca, you've never done this or that. You know, so they have this totally false idea, and then they attack us rather than considering the information. So here's what Aldous Huxley says, George Orwell's own tutor. The function and The function of the brain and nervous system is to protect us from being overwhelmed and confused by this mass of largely useless and irrelevant knowledge. By shutting out most of what we should otherwise perceive or remember at any moment, and leaving only that very small and special selection, which is likely to be practically useful. And Huxley was actually quoting someone there. He says, according to such a theory, each one of us is potentially mind at large. But insofar as we are animals, our business is at all costs to survive. To make the biological survival possible, mind at large has to be funneled through the reducing valve, the brain is a reducing valve, has to be funneled through the reducing valve of the brain and nervous system. So right there, he's saying your brain is a reducing system, not how you gather and take information in, but it's reducing and limiting everything. So he's actually flipping it all upside down. And then he says, what comes out at the other end is a measly trickle of the kind of consciousness which will help us to stay alive on the surface of this planet. to formulate and express the contents of this reduced awareness, man has invented and endlessly elaborated those symbol systems and implicit philosophies which we call language. And then he continues on down the page, that which in the language of religion is called this world, quote unquote, is the inverse of reduced awareness. So he's attacking all knowledge and information. Now, a friend of Aldous Huxley's who worked with him, and of course Aldous Huxley, as we've exposed repeatedly, was one of the key architects of the CIA's MKUltra program, and he was CIA and MI6. And so a friend who also worked with Huxley by the name of Jiddu Krishnamurti furthers this statement and says that knowledge helping man to ascend seems so utterly nonsense to me. So what we have here is in Orwell's version, the government gives a command that no more sensing is allowed and will enforce it by physical force. And then in Aldous Huxley and Jiddu Krishnamurti's versions, they spin it to get you to accept it as something wonderful and spiritual. You know, so it goes to show that mysticism is the tool of tyrants. They spin this all to sell it as mysticism. But when you look at Huxley's own student, George Orwell, and his comment that, you know, the party told you to reject the evidence of your eyes and ears, it was their final, most essential command, now you can see it. So how would they go about actually implementing this? Would they bludgeon you with it, or would they get you to believe that it's more spiritual not to think at all? You know, so, this is really what is behind what has consumed the New Age movement and the psychedelic movement and all of this New Age self-help stuff and everything that's going on. And even, you know, going back to William Thetford and Helen Schuckman, who were working for the CIA MKUltra Project 69 and 89 and wrote the famous spiritual book, A Course in Miracles. So you have anything to add to that, Joe?
Sure. Well, first of all, that's a great example of lifetime actors. And, you know, when I think of the problems that people have in the Brave New World of thinking clearly, I have like a, you know, some categories of type of problems they have. And the first one is they can't recognize sophistry because they don't have the suspicion that the person presenting the information is a lifetime actor.
They falsely trust people.
Exactly.
Right?
They give them
right.
And if like Jan gave just great examples there where if you look at Huxley with skepticism, if you look at Huxley, and Jan has done a lot of really good research tying Huxley directly into MKUltra. When you look at Huxley as someone who is an operative of MKUltra, then you can say, well, he's a lifetime actor. What I'm seeing on TV, the interview, the public statements, is not sincere understanding of his reality, but rather it's a device to control me. The lifetime actor is a weapon. The lifetime actor uses sophistry, and sophistry is hard to detect if you don't understand a lifetime actor, because sophistry will often be very logical. It will often claim to have evidence. You know, you look through what they're doing, and you'll go, gee, this makes a lot of sense. A good example of this would be Gordon Wasson's May 1957 article in Life magazine. You know, it describes this world where he goes and he takes mushrooms. And at the end of it, you would say, gee, this looks like a pretty good thing. You know, maybe I'll be involved in these kinds of spiritual adventures with these mushrooms. But if you look at the fact that he was being an agent of MKUltra, if you look
and
at
that it's being promoted by the mainstream media in the first place.
Right. I get to that saying, but that's exactly right. But then you would go, wait a second, is this article there to hurt me somehow? Is it there basically to make me less rational about something as potentially dangerous as these mushrooms? And so this is the this would be the kind of the first chapter of someone who is going to try to create a book that will enable them to, you know, my clear mind, you know, is that you wanna be more skeptical of individuals who are bringing information which is transforming culture to you. You wanna wonder, well, wait a second, is there any reason that they might be doing this? And then as long as we're on Wasson, I also wanted to mention, Jan, neuro-linguistic programming. Now, you can see the problem. It's because I'm actually going down from the, you know, kind of the easy stuff to the hard stuff to defend yourself against. You can defend yourself against contradiction. If you study the trivium and you learn about basically, you know, what the fallacies are, you can defend yourself against contradiction by understanding the trivium. You can defend yourself against sophistry by understanding the idea of the lifetime actor. But then you get into neuro-linguistic programming, what's called NLP. And this is a lot more difficult because this is basically, they've learned how to code your subconscious. And Jan has examples of, or he'll give, you know, references to where this stuff comes from. Carl Rogers, MKUltra, psychiatry.
Subproject 97.
Subproject 97. And so...
And that's also nonviolent communication. It stems out of directly this. So this includes the whole nonviolent communication and Marshall Rosenberg, who studied under Carl Rogers and Eric Fromm and was heavily influenced by Desjardins, Rianne Eisler, whom I exposed on the show with the shows with Bill Joslin.
Yeah. And so now, you know, you need to have this idea about the oligarchs have developed the technology to code your subconscious. And you know, Wasson actually, in the May 1957 article, you'll see a very primitive example of this with the phrase teenage allowances, which is directly underneath on the cover, inside a black box, which is basically inserted into the cover photograph. You'll have these concepts, you know, great adventures, you know, mysterious visions in the Mexican desert, and then teenage allowances. And the concepts, as they are presented, will entwine in your subconscious, and then you will basically think it's a great adventure to take these drugs. In other words, it's not dangerous. This is like a Disney ride or something. And then, of course, teenage allowances just speaks for itself. I mean, you can see that they are trying to code your subconscious. So this is, Jan is now bringing that up, and you can see what they've done what shows, you know, gives a person a way to understand that is the fact that Gordon Wasson, who wrote the article, the mushroom article, was actually being paid by MKUltra for this project. And so MKUltra, of course, is studying you know, how to code the subconscious. So you can be certain that this isn't circumstance, that this is actually a pretty primitive example of neuro-linguistic programming, but it's a good one to know because, you know, if you are, again, the consciousness, if it's, you know, clear, it can detect, or at least be on the lookout for this kind of stuff. And also, I would suggest that if you know that there is neuro-linguistic programming, for example, like MTV, right, the music videos, if you know that this operation is coming from, you know, individuals who are inside the operation to control Western civilization, then you go, you know, I'm not going to watch it. I will just not watch it. I won't let my children watch it. So that's another step, is the sealing off of the most rotten parts of the culture, the ones that are most specifically designed to hurt us. And this actually casts a, you know, kind of a pall over the entire media. Now, Jan, I mean, I think one thing people should know about is Operation Mockingbird, you know, which was the CIA's taking control of our major media, the reporters, the networks, and creating fake news stories. When you hear the term fake news,
was that Monarch or was that Mockingbird?
It's Mockingbird.
Okay.
Why don't you? I actually have a. If give me the screen for a second, and I'll read some citations that I have on a page in my computer. Yeah. Right now, I've got to exit full screen. But anyway, yeah, Mockingbird. Mockingbird was the operation that the CIA with Alan Dulles. It started in 1953. I just lost my screen again.
Sorry about that. Here, right. I'll close it.
And anyway, hold on a second. So I got to exit full screen, and now I get it back because I have it on a Word document. So I'll just read the citation. So in 1953, the network was overseen by Alan Dulles, director of the CIA. By this time, Operation Mockingbird had a major influence over 25 newspapers and wire agencies, which basically was almost all the newspapers in the United States. The usual methodology was placing reports developed from intelligence provided by the CIA to witting or unwitting reporters. Those reports would then be repeated or cited by the preceding reporters, which in turn would be cited throughout the media wire service. And so this never stopped, and in fact basically became what's called the Office of Policy Coordination. And this in 2008, the New York Times article wrote that during the early years of the Cold War, prominent writers and artists from Arthur Schlesinger to Jackson Pollock were supported always secretly by the CIA. And so you just, you know, as you start to study what begins with Operation Mockingbird and then becomes modern media, you know, they have control over, this is documented, over the heads of CBS, Time, New York Times, Louisville Courier, Copley News Service, ABC, NBC, AP, UPI, Reuters, Hearst Newspapers, Newsweek Magazine, Mutual Broadcasting System, the Miami Herald, and the old Saturday Evening Post. Now, these are just the ones that, you know, have been actually outed, but it's completely, the news is fake. It is, so we're living not in a fake news, but in a fake reality. See, this is the thing, our understanding of what's real. And so when you know, Jan talks about how the, you know, Huxley set up these parameters, right, of he's telling us that the mind should, you know, filter out things. Now think of how this is all working. Huxley they're basically trying to reduce the power of the consciousness, sex, drugs, rock and roll, and Huxley's invitation basically to accept a reduced stream of information in your mind, that this is normal and good. Okay, that's on one side. On the other side, they've got control over the media. This is where all your information is coming from. So
right.
Now you've got two jaws closing shut, right?
Well, there's another one there, Joe, because the media wants you to appeal only to their authority and that they want you to believe that you're incompetent to check things yourself.
Right. And then they intimidate you. It's just like, and so one of the things I think we have to worry about now, Jan, is that in addition to all these issues, is that so many people use social media on the internet for information. But social media is completely controlled by you know, the government operations. And so they're able to censor, intimidate, and just, you know, outright exclude people that they can identify as producing reasonable criticism of them. Jan and I had an experience about a month ago with a show that we did, and it ended up with Jan's YouTube channel being basically shut down.
Well, the live feed was shut down.
Right.
And it took me a month to get it back open again.
Right. And all that we did to, you know, get beyond this censorship was to run a video of Alan.
Larry and Ginsburg.
But it was of Allen Ginsberg speaking at NAMBLA, which I think is just...
No, it was the one of him on stage with the little boy.
Okay, but that's right. That's right. But you see, the reason why that was so important is in this particular video, which I think was actually found by Steve Outram, who's a good researcher. And Steve found this video of, it was one of the original kind of counterculture festivals that was held in San Francisco way back when, right? The very beginning of
the first one, actually.
It was exactly right. It was the first one. And somehow in the middle of it, Allen Ginsberg comes on stage with a little child. I mean, the kid was maybe 2 years old. And Ginsberg says, hey, this is a lost kid. No one knows who.
And this is a pedophile, right? You know?
Right. And so, okay. So then it showed Ginsberg kind of this really weird thing where he's got this kid on stage and he's kind of showing off that he's got this little 2-year-old, and he goes, there's no parents. I don't know where the parents are. And then Steve cuts to Ginsberg at NAMBLA, the pedophile organization, which there was some controversy about whether or not Ginsberg was a member, but Steve resolved this by actually showing a video of Ginsberg addressing and describing, you know, pedophilia in really energetic and romantic terms. Now, folks, this is information that, you know, everyone absolutely has to have, but we couldn't get it, at least at that time, to the people, because this, you know, we were basically censored. So here is, this is another example of the, you know, the pitfalls, the obstacles to being able to think clearly. And so one of the things that we can do is, when you see something like this, when there's a component of culture that is really, you know, necessary for people to understand, like these videos, then everyone needs to participate in circulating them, because, and this is, you know, one of the improvements in thinking I think we can do is that, and this is actually an action, but is to, when these kinds of events come up, when these presentations of information that is absolutely critical, is, for heaven's sakes, start sharing them. That we need to think collectively, and we need to share information collectively, because we have to start developing the techniques to overcome the censorship that we're facing on the internet.
Now, let's see, a few points that I wanted to bring up is that actually before Project Mockingbird, there was the whole War of the Worlds project that went on with CBS and Frank Stanton and Princeton that I exposed with Hans Utter a year and a half ago on Halloween night. We put out that episode. I highly recommend people that, because that also ties into things and how the media uses fear to get people to believe or do a certain thing. And then also I wanted to mention that after people have studied the Trivium Method, and go to triviumeducation.com for that, also check out Bill Jocelyn and my video that we did on nonviolent communication, etc. And then, you know, to understand, once you have this foundation, these prerequisite studies, then go and study NLP and NVC so that you can see how these things are trying to manipulate you, and then you can help other people. You know, eventually, the evidence behind NLP and NVC is that it was basically created by the CIA and intelligence community, et cetera, to thwart political movements. So if you can get everybody thinking all of this nonviolent communication, or focusing on their quote unquote needs, they just need something rather than looking at the issue and the facts, then you can actually shut these things down. So it's really key, you know, to go through. Now, what I wanted to do is read another quote that's a famous quote by Aldous Huxley, and then go into some other material here, but Aldous Huxley stated, and this goes into all of this, and I added a little tidbit into it, within the next generation, I believe that the world's rulers will discover that infant conditioning and narco-hypnosis, and I added, and pseudo-spirituality, are more efficient as instruments of government than clubs and prisons, and that the lust for power can be just as completely satisfied by suggesting people into loving their servitude. So again, this goes to this, this whole thing that I was reading from, you know, George Orwell earlier and then Aldous Huxley. So by getting people to shut down their senses and not look at things, et cetera, they can suggest people into loving their servitude. And you get all of these bliss bunnies, all of these people that are utterly caught into positive thinking and actually refuse to look at anything that they deem as negative. Well, how can you judge if something is positive or negative before you've looked at it? You know, they think if it's political or if it's a conspiracy or whatever, you know, as if conspiracies don't exist, then they should automatically push it out. It's negative. Don't look at it. Never mind if it saves your life or protects you and your family or makes you aware of some potential danger or whatever. You just automatically dismiss it. Does that work in your benefit or into the benefit of those who don't want you to look and see and understand things? So when we begin to understand how positive thinking is misused to create this bliss bunny mentality, then we can begin to, you know, see how these types of controls are used and how, you know, they sell spirituality to actually get people to stop thinking. It's like, you know, meditation and Gregory Bateson and Alan Watts's double bind, which was actually to get people caught up in their minds so that they could not think. And they actually, you know, the whole purpose of it was to not think. And Bill and I have also exposed that in an episode on meditation that I also recommend everybody watch. Now, what I did over the last few weeks was I started posting these short posts on Facebook called self-empowerment tips. And a lot of people seem to like them. Some of them took off a little bit. But so what I want to do, Joe, is go through some of these just to give people an idea, because I think just in the, you know, and going through these, people, many people will be able to, you know, get a glimpse of what's going on. So self-empowerment tip number one, there are no contradictions in nature, only in our minds. A contradiction is the sign of a lie or an error. You can find truth. Allow your senses to recognize contradictions and hunt them out. Each time you find one, dig deeper into the information until no more contradictions exist. Then you'll know the truth. Truth can set you free. Logical fallacies, study logical fallacies and logic to help you identify contradictions, errors, and lies. Make fun games with your family and friends to learn to identify them. Radio and TV commercials can be a real riot when used as aids to teach us how to identify lies. Simple tools for gaining knowledge in any investigation are these questions in this order: who, what, where, when. Once you have this information, you can begin to understand the why of a particular situation, event, idea, or subject, and how it happened, and you'll be able to explain it to others. Don't let others fool you. Sometimes people want to stop you from asking these questions so that you can't find the answers. Don't be a sucker. This process is a sort of mental antivirus for our minds, and with it we can identify truth and protect us and our loved ones from harm. Do you have anything you wanted to add to that one?
No, I mean that just stands alone. I think that's a really good just starting point for everyone to you know, bring to their lives if they want to start improve thinking. The process to resolve things to the point where there's no more contradictions may not always be possible, just because you get to a point where you know.
Yeah, if you got to go dig in the desert in the Sahara to find out if it's A or B or whatever, you know, you got to leave it.
So you have to kind of use this with some wisdom and in a, you know, a nuanced way. But that principle is a better principle for spirituality than anything that the religions of Western civilization has ever given us. And it's exactly what the oligarchs created those religions for, to as the first step of primitive propaganda, so that there would be faith, you know, in Jesus or Moses or someone, or you know, Muhammad,
Abraham,
and rather than the responsibility and the power of your own mind. I mean, basically, the oligarchs want the individuals to see themselves as impotent and to behave in an impotent way. When you have that power, when you have that as your first step, then the spirituality, which has been, in my opinion, stolen from us, is an energy that can help us use reason and logic to basically to uncover the truth.
All right, so here's self-empowerment tip number 2. Mysticism is the tool of tyrants. Focus on what you can know rather than on what you can't know. The trick is to get you to believe things that you cannot verify for yourself. If you cannot verify something but believe it anyway, you can be led to believe almost anything, no matter how awful it really is versus how beautiful it may seem. Mind control works by getting you to believe things you cannot know for certain. By following things you can actually know and verify, you'll free yourself and build self-confidence and be self-assured in the information you've verified rather than unsure in what you speculate about what you've been told by others but haven't verified. We can speculate endlessly on that which we have no evidence for, but if we follow the evidence instead, we find our steps becoming self-assured. Don't be afraid to be self-confident. Others may try to beat you down when you realize that it's all a trick. But the more you're self-assured, the less you'll be bothered by others' attempts to pull you back down. Don't be mind-controlled for a tyrant. Stop speculating about that which you can't know, and focus on that which you can know.
Right. Excellent. And so that's just, you know, again, I love these little tips, and I think they are basically the antidote to the propaganda that comes off of the social networks and other, you know, information sources. I know this is kind of a segue, but I didn't want to forget to conclude this. Is, you know, we've got all of this website polling and popularity and page view counts and things like this. Well, just remember that Snowden, when he released his documents, one of them actually showed that the governments manipulate all these things, right? So again, it's this, you know, you have the power of intimidation is basically always something you have to be weighing. And in fact, it wasn't just television and internet websites, movies, video games, basically all of these things are manipulated. So bring a clear mind and bring a you know, strong level of skepticism to all the media.
All right, self-empowerment tip number 3. Boy, let's see if I can read a little bit better today. I'm just tripping over myself.
You're tired. It's been a long day of research for you. I know it.
All right, here we go. Study things before you think you know what they say. Did you read, watch, listen to something in its entirety before trying to comment on it, or before you try to inform others what's wrong or correct with the information and dismiss it or accept it? One of the largest items to distinguish between those which we consider intelligent versus those which we consider stupid is the ability to take in information before deciding its merit. Under which category do you fall into? No one wants to be the fool who doesn't study things first, but unfortunately, the vast majority of people fall into this category. Most people come at new information as if they already know all about it, though have studied nothing at all. Don't be this person. Typically, people fall back on information that they've heard elsewhere that may contradict the new information. A contradiction is a lie or an error, remember? And so rather than trying to figure it out, they automatically assume older information is somehow more valid or easier, though they also did not verify it. They simply cannot admit that they were wrong or fooled, and so they ignore or attack new information or the presenter, an act which then reinforces their own ignorance and suppression. See also the Dunning-Kruger effect and incompetent and unaware. Even if you disagree with 95% of what someone says, or even if 95% of what they say is wrong, that 5% that's correct could change your entire understanding of something. When we dismiss or accept new information and ideas for the simple fact that we think we know something but haven't verified personally or studied, or because it contradicts our current quote-unquote beliefs, or goes along with what we think we already know is true, we are actually limiting our ability to learn and grow. We are perpetuating our own stupidity, our own ignorance, rather than our intellect. If the information is logical and meets the onus of proof, study it. But look at it before you assume to know something you don't. Don't fear to study others whose beliefs may be different than yours. This is how we learn and grow. You don't need diapers and safe zones. You can be challenged, learn new things, and grow. Only if you don't pretend to already know things you don't and have not studied. Be smart rather than stupid.
Yeah, well said. And I just wanted to add that the mirror of that position is also really important. In other words, don't assume something is true just because a person that you trust brings the information to you. I'll give
absolutely. Well, and you talked about that earlier about, you know, how people automatically give false trust, you know, to
trust is the key to getting propaganda to be effective. And I'm going to give you two examples, John, of things which I think are going on right now. You're going to have authorities like Harvard Law School professors arguing that the First Amendment is outdated and we should get rid of it, right? Because they're going to say that, well, the internet is dangerous and you can have crackpots that will do dangerous things because of fake news. So the First Amendment is outdated. And because it's going to be a Harvard Law School professor, the fact that this is just a obvious step toward fascism will not come to a person's mind. They won't give the automatic response of, I'm going to actually dispute this claim and do some research and come up to my own opinion. They won't do that because of the, you know, you have some person like a Harvard Law School professor arguing that the First Amendment is outdated. And the other example, and the reason I'm bringing these up, John, is I think these are two elements that are in play right now. And the other one is that they're going to try to make pedophilia like a psychological condition and something that, in fact, is very natural and that everyone experiences, and therefore they're going to try to decriminalize it. And they're just going to do it in this very subtle way. They're going to have tiptoeing in, and then they'll have people who have cultural influence, you know, talking about, like a Sarah Silverstone.
Silverman, yeah, and her comment. I saw that. She's just hideous.
Yeah, she is so hideous. It almost pains me even to say her name. But the thing is that she said, she had a tweet, which was the question, is it molestation if the child makes the first move?
Right.
And then the next line was, I need an answer quick.
Right.
So she was making a joke out of it, the idea that this is a realistic situation she was trying to resolve. You know, she could deny, and then she would say, well, you have no sense of humor. But you see, the problem is that humor is one of the things like rhythm and blues music that enables people to bypass the consciousness. That's part of something people need to know, is that, you know, when you're dealing with propaganda, neurolinguistic programming, that there are ways that people can get past the immediate normal consciousness that would basically try to filter that information into their own thinking system. When a comedian, you know, uses humor, they can get into areas that usually people would.
Well, what is comedy, Joe, but sophism, which is intended to be funny, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so comedy is one thing that really you have to be careful about. And the other thing, of course, is music. Hans Utter has done a really good job of explaining in a lot of shows you've done with him how music can be used to circumvent the consciousness, and has been used and is just a known technique of that the oligarch use to get information and beliefs into us that would otherwise just could never, you know, bring a straightforward, reasonable argument to us because we would dismiss it. So I'm sorry to be long-winded, but those are just...
It's all right. We still have 14 minutes left. You got plenty of time.
Okay. I want you to have enough time, but I just... Anyway, so those are the two...
There's plenty of time, so go ahead.
Okay. Well, those are just two things I think are important that are exactly as Jan had characterized with his suggestions. It's just, it's the mere opposite. In other words, do not trust someone who's supposedly in a position of authority's information. Don't give it a power in your mind greater than anyone else's. Always use the principle of criticism and logic, regardless of who is bringing the information to you.
And always, you know, recognize these agendas, you know, et cetera. Obviously, a child is not sexually mature, intellectually mature at all to, you know, for Sarah Silverman to even be proposing such a question. But the issue of her sophist question is to get people to start questioning if pedophilia is okay. And then we see this going on in the New York Times, et cetera, all over the place. And, you know, this started with Alfred Kinsey and his pedophiles and all of this stuff back in the 50s. But, you know, this is their tiptoe agenda that they started, you know, what, 60 years ago.
Right. And in this case, it's just basically trying to create the most debauched sexuality that is possible for a culture to have, because they know that that is the furthest position away from the family structure that they want to destroy.
Now, somebody from Brazil posted earlier, thanks Lee for posting this, and he posted a quote from Aldous Huxley that says, if you're going to enslave a population, you have to make sure that there's plenty of sexual freedom to release the tension.
Right.
You know, so all of these people that, you know, think running naked down the beach or flashing your boobies or whatever is about your freedom, it's not. You're actually being tricked into your slavery, into dumbing down, into thinking of carnal pleasures rather than building for your future and this sort of thing. So you're thinking of the temporary. Let's not have a family. Let's not have extended family around. Let's not have something that's stable and concrete that, you know, goes on into future generations. We're going to party and do drugs and dance and play rock and roll music and, you know, take the CIA's LSD and believe Aldous Huxley's Brave New World horseshit. Now, I do have one more self-empowerment tip. I haven't done more yet, so this is where we're up to. And this is self-empowerment tip number 4. It's easier to spend an hour in the research for doing... Geez, here we go again. It's easier to spend an hour in the research for truth, or in the search for truth, geez, doing research than to spend a lifetime believing lies. Probably about 80%+ of what most people think or believe they know is actually false. Spend the time to actually look things up that you've never personally verified, and before you send them on to others or assume they're true. Don't be the person who says you don't have the time. We all make mistakes, but the more we do to verify things before we send them on to others, the more we limit false information or mental viruses from spreading. After you spent some time verifying the inventory of your own mind, you'll gain self-confidence and know that what you know is true. Just because it sounds good or positive, or negative for that matter, doesn't mean it's true or false. Sometimes all it takes is 10 or 15 minutes to verify something? And what if it takes weeks or months to get to the bottom of an issue and remove all the contradictions? One answer would be to take your newfound knowledge and write a book on it and empower others with the verified information.
Right. Couldn't agree more.
Wait, Joe, your chair is pretty squeaky.
I know. It is squeaky. I'm going to get that fixed, but it's kind of, I hate to say it, it's almost a trademark of me at this point. So the squeaky guy with the squeaky chair. But, you know, I was going to say that one thing that, you know, people should use this on would be how Eros is used to control. Okay. There's a lot of good examples of where you can actually see people saying that, you know, we want to control people. And the way to do it is with Eros. Now, notice the quote from Huxley about, you know, if you want to enslave people, then you have to, you know, make sure there's a lot of sex. Well, if you read The Authoritarian Personality, which is created by the American Jewish Committee by Theodore Adorno, Horkheimer was involved in these are individuals who end up basically attending the cybernetics, you know, part of the Macy conference, which becomes NK Ultra.
I'll share it on screen here.
Okay. And they wrote, lost it. All right.
You see it now?
I see it, but I can't read the quote.
Sorry. I was just saying I was going to share it for you.
Quote, that, you know, so just as this is an example of the kind of research that you really want to do. And it's, So at the conclusion of, you know, of their kind of development of science to be able to determine, you know, what the things that they are worried about and to change them, they decided that they were going to use Eros and psychological techniques to be able to control people. And this is, I'll just read the end of it. It says, thus, we need not suppose that appeal to emotion belongs to those who strive in the direction of fascism, while democratic propaganda must limit itself to reason and restraint. If fear and destructiveness are the major emotional sources of fascism, Eros belongs mainly to democracy. Now, bear in mind that, you know, Eros and Civilization, the book which advocated polysexualism and just, you know, an end to marriage, which was written by Herbert Marcuse, that Marcuse was a member of the Frankfurt school that basically this group that produced this document, you know, were from. So you can see that the idea that Eros would be a technique within democratic propaganda was something that people knew about and were thinking about. And so when you then look at our modern culture, this is an example of the kind of research that will help you have like the, you know, the ability to resist being enslaved, because, you know, when you see this, you go, oh, okay, this is clear, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll don't necessarily add up to freedom. And we can believe Huxley, who was involved with MKUltra, that he was describing an actual technique that they were going to use when he was talking about, you know, this lots of sexuality for control in a slave state. See, that's the key, is that they're not trying to take you to, you know, some kind of a good place where you, oh my gosh, I have all this freedom and I'm having a lot of sex. They're trying to create a slave state.
Well, you know, it's like Hassani Sabah and, you know, the Hashishans, the assassins,
yeah,
and using sex and drugs and all to create these assassins that would go out and do his bidding. You have this hyper-sexed, drugged person that is then totally under the control of somebody else, and that's exactly what we see with this, and this is why they all worship Hassani Sabah. But, you know, essentially, what this episode is about is learning to resist, you know, like William Sargent's book, The Battle for the Mind, learning to resist slavery, learning to resist, you know, mental slavery. The fourth world war is the battle for the mind, you know, so people need to start waking up and start thinking, studying, researching, fact checking, or we're going to lose, you know, and you're going to get enslaved. So, you know, if you're one of these people who thinks, and I want you to go into this, Joe, for the last 5 minutes, who thinks that quote unquote left brain thinking is wrong. You're in a situation because, you know, most of these people that I hear making such comments have never even studied any Western philosophy to ever even comment on it. And then they automatically think, well, Eastern philosophy is better because it's spiritual. So go ahead on and finish on that.
Well, I mean, the thing is that you've got this idea, which was very atomizing, right? There is a different way of thinking in the two brains. And, you know, just bear in mind that we've been atomized. I mean, we used to have these ethnic neighborhoods. Then we had extended families. Then we suddenly started having, you know, single moms. Then we started having males involved with pornography. Then we had the GPTLXYZ culture.
I think it's LBG QWERTY or something like that.
Anyway, but one of the components in all this was this right brain, left brain. And it's still, you know, in the public vernacular, people talk about it. But actually, this has been debunked by science. I mean, the University of Utah, they did an analysis of 1,000 brains, and they found there was no evidence whatsoever that creative people use either their left or right brain more than anyone else. All of the studies participants were using the brain equally throughout the course of the experiment. You can find this. It was the author of it was Dr. Jeff Anderson, and he's the director of basically MRI neurosurgical mapping. Now, the reason why this is such a complete debunking of it, you know, is that the guys who are coming up with the left brain, right brain, they were just basically, you know, using studies that had to do with damaged brains, right? The studies that the modern researcher are doing, like Anderson, is they use MRI technology. So they're not talking about some kind of theory. They can actually see that the brains are using both hemispheres in both creative and analytic thinking. So the whole left brain, right brain is just another one of the tools that they use to, you know, he's a right brain person. He's a left brain.
Well, which is an ad hominem right off the top.
Of course. But and it's an ad hominem that has no real basis in reality. It's just, but these things are popular in the modern culture because the people who put them there did so and have promoted them because it enables people to be irrational. They go, you know, I know it's not logical, but that's not me. I'm not a right brain person. You know, I'm a left brain thinker. Look, logic and reason extends over the entire reality. It's sort of like gravity or the principles of mathematics. It never disappears. It doesn't matter if you're left or right brain. You still have to try to think as clear as you can. And this concept was just put in there, Jan, to help people be irrational. You know, it's just another one of the many, many things that people in our culture have to put up with and resist in order to get to the point of thinking clearly.
All right. So I think that's about a wrap. Joe, your website again?
Hey, caesarsmessiah.com. And I want to thank everyone who has been giving donations. They're really, really, I'm really grateful to all of the people who have been giving donations to me recently. We can't do this without your support. And I want to thank you. CaesarsMessiah.com is where you want to go. And Jan, how do people reach out to you?
GnosticMedia.com. And there's a great big donate button up there on the top of the page. There's also Bitcoin donations, etc. Please also support CCN. And see you all next week.
See you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
If we want to change the world, we must first change the media. Mainstream media exists for the purposes of indoctrination and manipulation of public perception. The world of free and independent media is growing, and with the upsurge in information now available in the public domain, it has never been easier to access free and independent media. The exploration of this information resulted in an experimental project which would provide a fully supported space for researchers, whistleblowers, and seekers of all kinds to express themselves and educate the world. On the 1st of January 2015, Conscious Consumer Network was launched to the world. Nobody thought we would make it this far, but CCN is the longest running free and independent media network of its kind. CCN is a unique collaboration of hearts and souls, bringing you information from different perspectives to educate and inform. Since we started CCN, we have had only one desire, the pursuit of a free, fair, just, sustainable world, and this has not changed. Having overcome many challenges over the last 2 years, CCN is here to stay, and we've got great things.